It is The Drive with Sam Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. Derek Piper, Kyle Tosk with you the rest of this hour. Tons and tons of texts. We appreciate it. 217-359-2255 on the U of I Line and Link text line. Feel free to direct them at Kyle, though, because, you know, if I get tired and don't sleep on this man's knowledge. He's walking the campus with these players and probably see some coaches.
I got to put some work in on some of these visits, huh?
Yeah, right. No doubt. I heard somebody on our board said they saw Dante Maddox cruising campus in a golf cart earlier today. It must have been Kyle's burner account. Do you have a burner account on Atlanta Inquirer?
I don't know. I'm on there, but I'm not a message board poster.
Okay.
Maybe I need Goodbye to start you. Being that. Or no, you don't advise that.
No, I mean, you can do whatever you want. Some people on there are great, and a lot of them are great as far as the posters go. There's just some real funny people out there with their gifts and whatnot. But, you know, it's a business. So you got some that maybe aren't my favorite. Some don't like me very much. So, you know, it just goes that way. We're very lucky to have the community that we have. Speaking of which, same with the text line here. We'll get to more of your texts as we go along. Did want to just start with this, though, Kyle. Sincere Harris going into the transfer portal. Let's tackle that news a little bit. Do you expect Imani Hansberry? I'll give my input on that, and you can as well, as far as our gut thinking on.
I think we need your gut thinking.
Okay, yeah. Fine. Let's go with Sincere, though. All right, this doesn't shock me, and it wouldn't have shocked me even before Chester being out. Now, I think that him being gone makes it even more obvious because the guy that brought him in as a recruit, the guy that he's worked closely with as far as his development goes, and I wouldn't be too stunned if Chester's trying to recruit him to West Virginia. If DeVries wants him there, I don't really know how that's going to ultimately work out. But even though Sincere tweeted his video and said, "You're too loading, ILL," I had heard in checking around with people that was not a done deal, that he was staying, that we'd still have to see how the rest of this month played out, if he was ultimately going to end up in the portal or not. Illinois is recruiting guards to play in front of him. Not saying he couldn't have played a role on next year's team as a defensive stopper, as an energy guy. If his offensive game has progressed, which I've heard it has, how much does that, and does it translate into real games? He was operating on the scout team and got a lot of shots. I've heard it's been good for him to play more with the ball in his hands and just allow himself to be a little bit more free offensively and work on some things without having it hurt him, hurt the team. So what that ultimately looks like going forward, I'm not sure, but they want, obviously, and wanted Kylan Boswell. They want Dante Maddox. They expect DGL to take a step forward. So Sincere would have had to compete for a role, wouldn't have been guaranteed too much if he came back. But now him being in the portal, not surprising, right, Kyle? And I don't know how much it doesn't hurt you a ton, I don't think. It would have been nice to have him just to be a little bit of a changeup, especially defensively. And I still like who Sincere could become if the offense comes around. But as of right now, in Illinois' win-now mode and who they can go get in the portal, I don't think this hurts you a ton.
I mean, this thought crossed everybody's mind the second he announced he was redshirting, right? I mean, it's,
yes.
And Brad Underwood tried to say that it was just going to be, you know, work on himself and come back next year. No one redshirts anymore without some ulterior motive behind it. It's very, very rare. I'm not going to say nobody does it, but it's rare, especially for somebody who had played as a freshman already.
Especially to tell the team during the shoot around right before the Eastern Illinois game.
Is that what happened?
That's when he told the team he was redshirting. He brought it up with the coaches after the Kansas exhibition game, but he told the team, I believe, the day of the game that he was going to be redshirting. So that was very much a surprise to them, to the coaches, when they brought that to the table, and it was late developing right before the season.
Yeah, so it's been on my radar at least ever since that point that I felt like there was probably at least that option was in his head when he made the decision of maybe I'm preserving these 3 years for somewhere else. And it was probably always going to be a situation where he wanted to, you know, coming off a year where he didn't play, he wants a featured role on next year's roster. He wants some sort of playing time guarantees and wants to be assured that he is going to be a top option, or at least a guy who is in the mix for a starting spot, or is going to be somebody that's firmly in the picture for Illinois next year. And it, based on how Illinois attacked the portal, that wasn't something they were going to assure him. He was going to be someone who had to earn that. And there was going to be a role for him on next year's team if he stayed, but it was probably going to be similar to what he played as a freshman, unless the offensive game had come a super long way. He had a long way to go offensively coming off his freshman season, and maybe a full year redshirting and being the lead option on the scout team for a year did that for him. But I would imagine that if Illinois' staff felt like that was the case, that they would have been more comfortable trying to keep him around. And so I'm not surprised by it. And to be honest, I think it's one where you probably, especially for next year, I know he has 3 years eligibility left, but if you're looking at next year, you could probably do a lot better than him, especially when you pair that with some of the lineups that you're going to play. Like if Ty Rogers and Merez Johnson are on the court, you're not going to feel very comfortable with Sincere Harris playing with him, unless he all of a sudden developed a 40% three-point shot, which I'd find hard to believe. He probably improved it, but still a guy who was questionable as a shooter. And I his defense is what you're going to miss the most, but he was kind of more of a specialty player. And I think Illinois has definitely made it coming off last year where they were a top five offense in the country. They've made it a pointed approach here to really find more offensively capable guys, especially in the backcourt. So it's not a surprise. I'd be interested to see him follow Chester at West Virginia. I think he could be a useful player throughout the rest of his college career, but probably not a guy who's going to be your second or third option on a Big Ten caliber team.
If this was typical Press Virginia under Bob Huggins, he'd be a great fit.
He'd be
there.
Perfect.
94 feet defense, play a little bit of havoc, attack and transition, those type of things. Maybe don't have to. You sacrifice some defense, some turnover creation on at that end of the floor for some shooting, and I think he'd fit in that type of situation. Some of those kind of older school Cincinnati teams that are really tough and hard-nosed, and he's a tough dude. He's good athlete. He's got the ability to obviously create havoc at the defensive end, but, yeah, offensively – seemed to be, now he was only a freshman, and I got to keep that in mind with the last time that we saw him play, a little sped up offensively, would not shoot the ball all that well, didn't think he was going to be someone that would really make others better around him, and I don't know how much I'd want, even though on the scout team he played with the ball in his hands a lot, I don't know how much I'd want that
right
on my team in the Big Ten, so I definitely agree with that, and I do think that just the gauge from the coaching staff was that, I mean, the reason that he redshirted is because he was unhappy with the idea of him playing like 8 minutes a game, which he did in the Kansas scrimmage, if I'm remembering off the top of my head. It was single digits minutes, and he said, I don't want to burn a year of eligibility having that small of a role. So he thought that he should, whether it was Illinois or somewhere else, be more of a rotational player with more guaranteed. And yes, I think that as Illinois, if they add the pieces they want here coming up, they got Boswell, if they get Maddox, or if it's not Maddox, if it's somebody else, that there wouldn't have been that guarantee that he'd have the role that he would ultimately want to. If he said, hey, you know, I'm just going to work for, and I'm not saying he didn't work, if he just wanted to come back and be at Illinois and earn everything and not have this set in mind what his role should look like as a sophomore, then maybe they would have been fine with sticking him out, and I'm not saying they pushed him out or anything, but you know what I'm getting at ultimately. Yep. So that's kind of where I'm at on Sincere.
Do you see him as somebody who would benefit from going down a level if that's what he wants? If he wants to be a featured guy, I just find it hard to believe that there's going to be a ton of teams out there that are going to make him a big promise or commit to him as their starting two guard next year.
Mm-hmm.
Could develop into that, absolutely, but I almost feel like he's a great candidate to go down a level and then try to come back to the Power Five level as an upperclassman.
That's a good point. Akron,
John Gross,
could see that.
That's not a bad fit at all.
No, yeah, maybe it's the MAC, maybe it's maybe the A-10, something like that could definitely work. And then maybe it is a situation where you get those minutes. Maybe you try to go, all right, Dante Maddox is out at Toledo. And I mean, Toledo maybe wants more of a, they were one of the top 3-point shooting teams in the country this past year. So maybe they want to be more offensively geared, but find a squad that really values defense, maybe is pretty aggressive defensively, and go in there and maybe be a starter. And then your final year or two, you can make that move back up. Now with the current environment, you don't got to worry about being stuck at a place. If you kill it, you could go back right in the portal the next year. So
do you think that's going to change at any point?
I hope so.
I hope so too. But do you think that it transfer whenever the heck you want is going to be a thing going forward?
Probably.
Or is the NCAA going to get control back of that?
I doubt that they're going to get control back. You probably let it out of the box now, and good luck putting it back in.
See, that's the one thing. Like, I've fully embraced the new college basketball with the portal, with NIL. The one thing you can't let happen is guys go to 4 schools in 4 years, or guys just can leave every... You got the one-time transfer was fine, was perfect as is. NCAA's got to get control of that, to me.
But see, it was court-ordered.
I know. But
so they pushed back on it. They fought it. They wanted to tell everybody that wanted a waiver no, and they did.
Was it just as simple as like all the... I'm trying to remember because we had a discussion about this back in December. Was it just like all the two-time transfers joined together and sued the NCAA and said we should be playing?
There was a couple of them. There was one at West Virginia, and then there was somebody somewhere else, and they said that they're hurting their money-making opportunities. This is essentially a job for them. Which is what we're going to get to next, is that it's going to be...
It's just going to turn into a professional...
They're employees. Now you got to pay them out of your own pocket, not just your boosters. You got to pay them from your athletic department. And maybe that's where we need to go. And I know this is an entirely different conversation, but that would maybe then give more control back to the athletic departments, the teams, because then they could introduce, all right, we'll pay you some of our money, but we're going to have a 2-year contract. You're going to come in, you're going to sign this, and it'll be a little bit more professionally constructed instead of this freedom of movement, because it's not pay for play, or at least everybody, I wouldn't say everybody's telling themselves that. They're the notion or the charade that it's not pay for play is still out there, at least in terms of what this was supposed to be, but obviously we know what it is.
When you see somebody that is at their 4th school, I feel like that's crossing
ridiculous.
The line. Yeah, that's something that you got to figure out a way to stop that from happening. But back to Sincere, let's just say Illinois were to get Dante Maddox. Would anybody out there have any objections over saying, I want 1 year of Dante Maddox over taking my chances on the next 3 years of Sincere Harris? I would have no hesitation. I'd say, give me the 1 year of Maddox. He's an immediate upgrade at the shooting guard spot, and even though there's the extra eligibility there, every year you're building a new roster, so I think Illinois is going to upgrade Sincere's spot.
Yeah, no, I agree with that for sure. And Maddox would be a no-brainer in terms of the shooting, and like I said, he's graded out well defensively. I'm not saying he's a game wrecker like Sincere can be in terms of that, with his press defense, with the way he can turn people over, and he can hound some really good and prolific guards like he did Boo Booey, Tiger Campbell, and whatnot. But it could be just a better fit, because we saw Illinois, not saying that Brad Underwood's going to want to be, you know, elite offensively and fighting towards, you know, bordering on outside the top 100 defensively, like just to be so offensively geared. Obviously, you want to be balanced if you can be, but I do think that they are going to preference scoring, floor spacing, offensive versatility in a big way, and still try to get the defense out of it too. But if they had to pick one or the other, I think they are going to go with the shot making and the ability to score, and then find a way defensively versus, hey, we're going to have multiple non-shooters, and until proven otherwise, Sincere is kind of one of those.
I got another question for you now, along those same lines, but different position now, going back to Kerry Booth. If bringing in Kerry Booth were to lead to Imani Hansberry leaving, is that a trade-off that you would be comfortable with Illinois making? Because at the end of the day, you look at it and you're basically trading off an incoming sophomore with 3 years eligibility left that's still developing, that has some untapped potential, that you're basically viewing who's got the higher upside, who fits us better. Mm-hmm. Is that a trade-off you'd be willing to make, Booth for Hansberry?
It's a great question. And if you look at where they were ranked, they were similarly ranked in their 2023 class. So I think Booth was ranked around 55, Amani in that 50 to, I don't know where he exactly landed, but they were pretty similar in their national ranking. Different stylistically, different in terms of what they do well. Like Amani is physical and can battle in the paint and is a guy that is just kind of that junkyard dog, where some of the criticisms on Kerry Booth is he's not as strong. He doesn't play as well through contact. He doesn't rebound as well. Can he guard some more of the physical fours that he'll probably see in the Big Ten? He needs to get in the weight room and get stronger and those type of things. Amani, it's about skill. It's about, can he shoot the three well enough to make him a four? Otherwise, he's a very undersized five at about 6'7", and he doesn't have the length, where Kerry is 6'10", and can maybe, in a help defense standpoint, be able to block some shots where Amani isn't as tall. So, Bill, I know you're pointing out here, he says Hansberry and Merez are similar guys, right? They have some similar strengths, because Merez, similar to Amani, not a great shooter, getting better as a shooter. He's at his best, Merez and probably Amani, in terms of strength, in terms of playing around the paint, and those type of things. So I agree with you, and what I'm getting at is I think Booth is a better fit probably with Merez.
I agree with you. Yep.
I
think, and you look back at the recruiting ranking, just to go back, Booth was ranked six spots ahead of Hansberry last year, according to 24/7.
Okay. I am a little biased because I fell in love with Amani.
I know Amani is your guy. I'm a little surprised from that standpoint.
No, I still really, really like him. And I think he can be a great player. And I think he'll be, if he goes in the portal, he'll be pursued by some, I'm not saying he's going to get like Duke or whatnot, but there'll be some teams that are dying to have him. I think Michael Shrewsbury will be dying to have him at Notre
Wouldn't
Dame.
That be hilarious if the two traded power forwards?
It would be.
The next 3 years would be fascinating to see who won that trade off.
Yeah.
It'd be a legitimate one-for-one trade. We're trading our soon-to-be sophomore fours.
And we would very much, like you said, be evaluating who made the right call on that. Now, Booth left more on his own accord. I don't know that Notre Dame wanted to get rid of him. I don't think they did. And I'm not saying Illinois is pushing Amani out, but they are recruiting over him. I mean, trying to push for Kerry Booth's commitment, it says to me that they're going to at least put him in competition with Amani. And I think that because of the fit with Merez and that the fact they want another five, like, they're bringing in front court pieces. If they wanted to say, we don't want to do anything to make Amani upset and show him that he's not going to have a big opportunity to get playing time, then they may not go this route. But obviously they feel like they need to win at the level they want to this year. I would expect Amani, especially with Chester out the door now, to probably hit the portal, and I will be looking for that here soon if I was trying to forecast it.
I agree with you, though. I think with Merez Johnson coming in, and also the fact that Illinois has been in the center market, or assuming they probably will be in the center market, you need more of a true floor spacer at the four, more of an athlete that can play out on the perimeter. And that's not to say that I don't think Amani Hansberry will be a good player, but I have always questioned how that fit is going to work with him and Merez. I've always been very skeptical about that. I've thought it could get Indiana-y from last year. I would be comfortable. I'm not going to make a proclamation about who I think will have the better college career, but I'd be more comfortable based on how Illinois is building this roster, probably with Kerry Booth and his upside as a shooter. Now, Amani Hansberry made a couple shots against UConn. He probably can be a threat from the outside, but just his build and his game is predicated more on being physical inside. And his game plays more like a center, even though he's undersized. So he's kind of that tweener. Whereas I think Kerry Booth is more of a true stretch four that could pair alongside a true center. So I'm comfortable with that. I think if that's the trade-off that's made, and it would be hilarious if it's just school for school, if Imani heads to Notre Dame, and I'm sure if Imani has a good game next year, everyone's going to flood the 24/7 message board and say, look at this dumb decision.
Uh-huh.
But no, I think that makes more sense for this roster. And I like Booth's upside. I know you do too. I know Illinois clearly does. I think he's going to be a much better shooter than the 29% he showed as a freshman. I think he's got that skill set to be a guy similar to he doesn't have like the facilitating and the defensive versatility of Coleman Hawkins, but he gives you the Coleman skill set that you're going to need to replace, I think.
No, that's a good point. And I was going in that direction, just going to say, as a high school prospect known as a better shooter than Coleman was, and again, he didn't shoot it great this past year, just below 30%. Now, obviously, Coleman early in his career at Illinois struggled with consistency from the outside, but I think that Coleman, of course, has the edge in terms of some playmaking, ball in the hand, setting some guys up. Now, he had some turnovers for sure, but that's just not really who Carey has been. And maybe you can try to tap into that a little bit more. I'm not saying he can't have the ball in his hands on the perimeter, top of the key, and see a cutter to make a pass or dribble into a handoff, those type of things. But just to be able to space the floor, because floor spacing, offensive versatility, those are all things that Illinois wants to continue to tap into and really, really love. So and to leave the lane not as clogged for Merez, like you were saying, to not have it be an Indiana situation. If you're going to get a wing, whether it be, if it were to be AJ Storr, I know we spent a lot of time forecasting what that would look like. If it'd be just another really good downhill athletic wing who wants to drive, you don't want that clogged up with multiple bigs who can't shoot. So I did like that Imani stepped out and knocked down a couple against UConn. I know it was in garbage time, but can he make that more consistent? That's a question for him. Carey Booth is supposed to be someone that if he plays at the level that Illinois expects him to and kind of the way he was thought of as a recruit, should be before too long a mid-30s in terms of percentage from three type of guy and someone that is very natural as a stretch four.
And I also think it's not out of the question for Imani Hansberry to be an NBA prospect, but I think would it be fair to say that Carey Booth has more pro upside than Hansberry would have?
It's thought of that way. Yeah, I don't know how Imani fits in the NBA. Like, because he's not like Draymond Green, because there's a little bit of like that type of body, but Draymond is more like fluid as an athlete, I think. That's the way that I would characterize it. And I do think we didn't see quite as much from Imani in comparison to who he was as a high school prospect. Like, he's someone that can pass from the outside, like can push the ball up the court off a rebound and find somebody in transition, can take it at the top of the key and play as kind of initiator in an offense. Like, I think he could do that kind of stuff, but the shooting with Merez, because you're going to want to play Merez, is a question. And then if you're going to play him at the five, which I think is fine offensively, it's perfectly fine. Defensively, not having rim protection when your center is 6'7" and trying to guard. I mean, we saw Coleman trying to guard guys in the post. Imani is obviously more physical and can hold his ground. Just people can score over him because he's not very tall. So I 100%, you said it. The magic word there is he's a tweener for sure. And good player, but he's a tweener. And Booth is definitely a stretch four. So I get the interest on Illinois' side for wanting to add him. We'll talk more as we go along. Got some more text to get to. But first, got to catch a break. Before that, do some work. Let me tell you about Busey and some tips on how to save some cash, because who couldn't and wouldn't want to do that? Save automatically. The easiest way to save is to do it where income is automatically deposited into your savings account. Every paycheck can be deducted and put away for a later date. With Busey, you can have that set up with your account and increase your chances for success. Save for the unexpected. Having an emergency fund to support present, unaccounted for needs, car breaks down, dental bill, a last minute vacation that you're deserving of, just need a break to get out of here. Hey, hello, that sounds fantastic. Where's my savings for that? Or hey, NIL. Someone calls and says, I need $1 million in NIL. Maybe you can then say, hey, I've been saving for this. Save to retire, save for reducing debt, and save as a family. How much better would Americans be with their money if they were intentional about teaching good money and savings habits at a young age for fun and animated programs to teach kids about earnings and savings? Busey.com/financial pathways. Check out Busey.com for all your personal, business, and wealth management needs. Busey, member FDIC.
We all have a mission in life. Something that drives us to explore, to grow, to love. And when we discover it, we're made whole. At OSF Healthcare, we want you to be the best you possible. We're here for you on your schedule to make your life just a little bit easier. Whatever your mission is, we're here to support it. Your life, our mission. Learn more at osfhealthcare.org/mission.
You have money laying all around your house. You just don't know it. And no, I don't mean selling your great-grandma's good china. I mean all the old metal items you don't want to use or get rid of. Don't pay someone to haul it away. Bring it into Max Twin City Recycling and get paid to have it taken off your hands. They love new customers and are more than willing to walk you through their process step by step. Come check them out at 2808 North Lincoln Avenue in Urbana.
Starting it over is what we do at Max Twin City Recycling.
Illini fans, mark your calendars for this year's Game Day Spirit Winter Stadium Sale. Shop this iconic sale on Saturday, December 2nd in the Great West Hall of Memorial Stadium from 9 to 1. Take advantage of the best deals and discounts on Illini merchandise around and shop their selection of University of Illinois Athletic Equipment Room merchandise. Follow their event page on Facebook to stay up to date with the latest deals and discounts. Stadium Sale is brought to you by the official fan store of the Fighting Illini Game Day Spirit.
Accumulation, preservation, generation. At Busey Bank, these are the principles we use to build meaningful financial partnerships with our clients and their families. With sound advice and vast resources, partner with Busey for a personalized approach to your legacy. Busey Bank, building business, growing wealth since 1868. Proud to be the official bank of the Fighting Illini, member FDIC.
Local, personal, trusted. Hi, this is Atta Durakan with First Federal Savings Bank of Champaign-Urbana, and we've been serving Champaign County since 1908. Our institution is safe, strong, and stable. We operate on a foundation of responsible and sound practices, and you can rest easy knowing we're your bank. Rated 5-star superior by Bauer Financial, Inc., fast, friendly, and local. With local loan decisions and underwriting, if you're not already banking with us, give us a try, and we think you'll love it here. First Federal Savings Bank, 356bank.com, member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS. 435-120.
I've got to clean out this garage. Let's see. What's the cheapest and easiest dumpster service in our area?
Here's what I found. The doggy bag.
Think she's broken. I'm not looking for takeout. Siri, try again.
The doggy bag from Bulldog Disposal in Mahomet.
Doggy bag? What's that?
If you got junk that needs to go, but you don't want the hassle of having an enormous dumpster delivered, grab a doggy bag, keep it as long as you need. They'll come take it away. For more information, just visit bulldoggybag.com.
That's bulldoggybag.com.
Hi, I'm Makaira Cook, and I'm here to talk about Pacifica on Green.
So what do you like about this place and living here?
Oh, I love this place. It's such a luxury apartment. There's plenty of amenities. There's a very nice gym, and the rooms are awesome. So I just love it here.
Every floor has something fun. Do you go to the game room?
Yes, I go to the game room some nights, and I'll play with my friends. We'll play Mario Kart a lot, and my mom really likes the Pac-Man.
Live the way you've always wanted. Visit them at PacificaOnGreen.com.
So when was the last time you saw a best deal guarantee?
You mean a promise that actually held up?
Right.
That some unknown online entity didn't want you to log in and download a code and then re-verify as you join some club?
Drives you nuts, I know.
And then once you purchase that set of steak knives?
Well, Dick Van Dyke Appliance World is a lot simpler. You find a verified great deal and they beat it. Just show them the deal you saw. A newspaper clipping or the online cart price will do, and then you're good.
At Dick Van Dyke Appliance World, it's one of those instances where you see a best deal guarantee and
you get the best deal.
This is Dennis Reakin, chairman of Dick Van Dyke Appliance World. Our exclusive 10-year protection plan comes free with most appliance purchases.
Whether it's a GE, Whirlpool, Frigidaire, Bosch, or any of our 30 brands, I guarantee we will beat any competitor's deal. Wow!
Big Van Dyke, Appliance World. When you buy from us, you get the whole store.
And now, Kelsey Briggs, owner of Salon 105 in Mahomet.
We have a luxury destination salon located out here in central Illinois, and we have stylists here for everybody and any need. We have a very wide range of stylists that can cover any needs. There is somebody that can provide any services from a perm to a balayage to extensions and everything in between. Every stylist that works here is certified in Bello Haven hand-tied extensions, and we do a lot of education. We bring in high-level educators from all over the world and invite local salons to come out here and learn. So not only do we welcome clients here, but we also welcome other stylists or salons in the area to come and learn.
To book your appointment at one of the premier salons in central Illinois, go to salon-105.com. That's salon-105.com.
Back on the drive with Sam Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. Stop the presses, or actually I should say start them, because we got some news. Not the news.
And Lante's not here for it. Are you kidding me?
Not the news that everybody out there wants. It's the news that Lante wants. Jaden Shute to the portal. After 2 years at Duke, not playing much at all. Illinois Wolves product, Yorkville Christian here in Illinois. He is going into the transfer portal. Illinois, though, we were talking about it off the air, has Luke Goody.
No thanks.
Has Jake Davis going after Dante Maddox.
He hasn't really played at Duke his first 2 years, right?
No, he hasn't, no.
He's no different than Goody and Davis to me. Illinois basically has him already. So I don't have much interest in that.
I liked him a lot as a high school prospect. Obviously, he was good enough to get recruited and prioritized by Duke and John Shire. But maybe DePaul with Brian Mullins, the son of Mullins there at – why is his first name escaping me? For Illinois Wolves. And then you have Iowa is another one that I have thought of a lot. Fran McCaffrey's done a – heck of a job with shooters. Mike Mullins, AAU director for the Illinois Wolves. His son, Brian Mullins, former SIU head coach, now an assistant for Chris Holtman at DePaul. Maybe that connection gets him back to the Chicago area. I know he's not from Chicago, but thereabouts, close to home. Or Iowa, team in the Big Ten, has always had good shooters and has developed the types of Joe Wieskamp, Peyton Sanford. I think, and I just texted this to somebody, Indiana should want him. They should, because they don't have shooters. And Trey Galloway has one more year.
He shoots way too well for an Indiana target.
I think they should be definitely going after him. We'll see. Who knows? That's one of the interesting things, and it kind of circles back to a conversation we've had before. Imagine if Jaden Shute went to, say, because we're talking Dante Maddox, what if he went to Toledo and shot 40% from three, was a starter, how much appeal he'd have after 2 years there versus 2 years at Duke and not playing? Because right now he's an unknown. Is he just not good enough? Was Duke – obviously Duke's been a really good program, right. Brings in a ton of talent.
It's really hard to judge the fact that he hasn't cracked the rotation at all in 2 years is definitely a red flag. But at the same time, you look at all the guys that were ahead of him and they're all five stars and really good players. So it's hard to really make an evaluation on him because we haven't seen him play at the high major level. Clearly, he was a high-level prospect out of high school. That's why he ended up at Duke.
Yeah.
But by his sophomore year, not being able to even be a bench piece in Duke's rotation, that probably tells you something.
Yeah, and some of the talk out there is that, predictably, he's had some issues defending.
Makes sense.
So we'll see how that looks. Maybe he would go to the mid-major level and try to play a bunch of minutes somewhere. And he was a good athlete in high school. Like I remember when I first talked to him, I mean, he had a 38 bordering on 40-inch vertical. Like, he's a guy that can play above the rim. It's just, I think, some of the lateral stuff, lateral quickness and standing in front of guys, but was a really good shooter. I think it's a very interesting one, and one that Lon has tabbed for a long time. I know he said that coming back to his home state and going to Illinois, I don't think that that's going to be the case, but he is in the portal, so we'll see where that one ultimately goes. All right, let's get to some of these texts, Kyle, before we ultimately... Yeah, good point, Corey, on the U of I Atlanta League text line. Shoot redshirted this past year. So he kind of did this in Sarah Harris.
Okay, but was it more of a situation where he knew he wasn't going to play, yes. So why even like check in garbage time, or was it he's like, he did the... It was a situation where he knew he wasn't going to play, right?
Yeah, right. He was not going to be in the rotation as it seemed. And no, he says injury. Why am I have dad brain versus portal brain versus everything. Okay, yeah, so he had a knee injury. Let's see, when did this come about? Okay, back in the fall, he had an injury and then ultimately decided to fully develop and fully focus on recovery. So thank you to Corey for setting us straight. That's my fault for not remembering that. Yep, didn't play as a freshman, got just buried in terms of the rotation, and then last year had an injury. Although he was not expected to now... Corey will text in and be like, yeah, Shire said he was going to start. But he was not expected to play a huge role.
Well, you look at that Duke roster, and he wasn't going to play.
Yeah, the guards in particular. So it'll be interesting to see where he ultimately ends up. Let's get to some texts here. And I had something that I wanted to finish the show with, but, you know, I can't even remember anymore. You want me to read them? 309, will Ty leave? I
would doubt it, right?
Doubt it based on what I've heard. Illinois definitely doesn't want him to leave. I've heard some things as far as him being locked in on next year. I would never say never, because there are possibilities for Illinois to maybe add a piece or do some different things where he would worry about his role ultimately and might want to go play somewhere more. It's kind of odd to say for someone that started every game last year or almost every game last year. But I don't think that will be the case this year if I was judging it right now. Do you think that's fair? Like,
yes.
You wouldn't pencil him into the starting lineup, would you?
I would prefer an Illinois roster next year that has him coming off the bench.
Yep. And I don't know if it will. I've heard they're going to put a lot into trying to get him to shoot a little bit with shot development, with just trying to get his confidence going and that type of thing. And we'll see if it pays any dividends. But as of right now, you can't rely on that. And I do think he'll go back into being like a 3/4, kind of a Swiss Army knife forward and not on the ball, obviously. And but off the bench would be my expectation.
I'll tell you one thing. If he shows up on opening night next year and buries a 3, I change my tune. I want him starting. I want him playing as much as possible.
No, you reserve the right to hold that out for sure. Let's get to Bill from Troy asking, is Boswell actually 6'2"? He's listed at 6'2". I don't know exactly if that's inaccurate or not. 6'1", 6'2". I think he's a legit 6'2", I believe. And then you go down here, he said, when they become employees, that being college athletes, and specifically in this case college basketball players, you bring the bag men back into sports. I get what you're saying, because if you're taking away the boosters paying these NIL, maybe it'll be a double dip. It'll be both. Probably. That's probably where we're going, is like you'll get a quote unquote salary or what have you. Or no, you're probably right. It might be an either or. If it is the athletic department paying what you're getting in NIL, it's coming out of their pocket. Then now you introduce boosters who want to get involved, who have the money to do so, and will try to create a competitive advantage. I get what you're saying, Bill. I just think that you're already in a situation where the boosters are highly enabled and have the money to spend. So I just don't know how we're going to prevent getting to a point where the next thing is saying, okay, they're employees. Now you owe them some money out of your pocket, and you, that the TV contract that you got through the Big Ten, through the NBC, Fox, the athletes are due some of that. I think the question that I'm asking here is, if that ruling is made, is it going to have to be widespread to where any sport that's broadcast on this TV contract is supposed to get a cut of some kind of money? Or is it then that you're going to divvy it up based on revenue generating and who you want to give that money to? Maybe a certain athlete is viewed as being more valuable to the TV eyes. I think those are all really interesting questions that you have to ask as you push forward in college sports. Let's see what else we got here. 217, would it be ridiculous for a school to work out a transfer portal recruit on their visit? Do you think anyone has done that? I was just thinking about Harris trying to prove to another school that he has a three-point shot. So there are rules that, I'm not saying they've never been broken, but there are not supposed to be coaching staff involved workouts for a recruit. Now, there have been recruits that go and work out on the practice floor, and the managers can rebound. I don't think that's a violation or anything. I've seen that happen through the years, but there's not supposed to be like a coach that then works out with them. Even in some like open gym situation, like a player can come on campus and work and run 5-on-5 with, or 3-on-3, half court, whatever you want with your current players. The coaches can't be there watching or obviously on the court involved. You could maybe then have some of your players report back and say, yeah, this guy's jumper's broke, or no, he actually was draining some threes. And I'm not going to be naive enough. I don't think other people are out there. The technology is there. Everybody, at least all the big time schools, film their practices. They have cameras targeted at the court. You actually could probably,
heck, Sincere Harris released like a 5-minute practice highlight tape.
Yeah, exactly. Like live video if you're not on the court and you're in the basketball offices. And that's probably a little bit more advanced, but it does exist. So what I'm getting at is there could be a school that has a camera on the court where the coaches aren't on the court watching the recruit work out, but they're watching what is happening on the court. That has happened. That does happen. Or maybe just behind closed doors, a coach says, all right, look, Sincere, show me if you can shoot or not. But by the rules, yeah, you're not supposed to work out a recruit. Muhammad listener, when guys transfer, do they leave classes right in the middle of the semester? Not typically, as far as I know. And I think that would hurt them in terms of their academic standing and their ability to be eligible at their next spot. So I think they stay on campus or at least proceed the rest online. But I think they have to play out the rest of their semester. And I've heard in the past that some guys have waited to go in the portal later because they want to avoid that awkward stage or stretch where you'd walk around campus and everybody knows you're leaving, or you're around your teammates going to be former teammates, you're around coaches going to be former coaches, and you want to just wait as long as possible up until graduation, if you're graduating, or just the end of the semester, so that you can avoid some of that awkward time. Oscar from Normal, here's a good one for you, Kyle. Why the big embarrassment let down in the second half of the Elite Eight? I point to 50% coaching problems to motivate and control momentum. Please elaborate a little bit.
We're doing this again now? We're going back to the Elite Eight game?
This one's for you.
I've said right after the game, I thought it was a terrible game plan. I think Illinois should have been a lot more competitive. In terms of, what did he say? Motivation
to motivate and control momentum.
I don't think that's really been a problem. I don't think that was the problem in that game. I just think you had a really bad plan of attack going at the best rim protector in the country and miserably failing all 19 times you did it, and UConn's really good, and they played a terrible first half and came out and were a lot better in the second half, and you couldn't score. I'm past that game. I do agree that better coaching was probably necessary in that one, in that particular game, but at the end of the day, I think Brad Underwood had his best coaching job of his career last year as a whole, when you look at what he did with the roster and with the guys that he brought in.
We talked about it, and I don't have a whole lot else to add. I think there should be frustration that there was the door open against a UConn team that scored 28 points in the first half. That's the fewest they've scored in any of their first halves in the last two tournaments when they won the title. Illinois should have been winning at halftime if they played a good game. If Terrence Shannon came to play and didn't, I don't think he like quit or anything. He just seemed to lose confidence, check out, less aggressive, kind of stand in the corner, and just wasn't himself. And then the hesitancy to shoot the three from Coleman Hawkins, from Quincy Guerrier, and some of just the determination to attack Klingon, obviously that can be your game plan going in. It was a gamble. And in hearing some of the talkings around the program, it's been 2 weeks plus since they lost. They tried to do their homework and talk to some people that had played UConn and like, you know, how would you attack them? How do you beat them? Some of it, the big thing they heard was you got to get Klingon in foul trouble. That they're so different with him off the floor. Now, the problem is if you go at him and you don't get fouls, then you're just getting your, you know what, beat. And what did Klingon have? 5 blocks in that game, probably altered 10 more shots than that. Had a super cold night from three. And then as you struggled offensively in the second half, early in there, your transition defense was pathetic. Like, just flat out pathetic. It was an open gym, like, up and down for UConn. So I'm with you on – I'm not with you on the motivation part, definitely. I am with you a little bit on the game planning or the pivot off the game plan, but the coaches aren't taking those shots. They're not making the pump fakes that Coleman had or the Quincy Guerrier had. I do think Ty Rogers played too much, and that was evident early that he shouldn't have been out there, because just from the moment the game started when UConn got on a run and the moment the second half started when UConn got on another run – Klingon was guarding Ty Rogers. That's on the coaching staff. So
yes. That made no sense. The other thing, too, was for as bad as the first half went, and I totally agree, I thought the game honestly was lost in the first half. The fact that you weren't up 8 at halftime, you were actually down 5 when UConn was 1 of 11 from 3 and playing poorly on the offensive end. To then come out down 5, everybody watching knew the most pivotal stretch of the game was going to be the first 4 or 5 minutes of the second half. Could Illinois really make this a game, or was UConn going to go on a run and take control? And you basically wasted the first 3 minutes of the second half by starting Ty Rogers. Made no sense whatsoever. That is one where I will agree. That one was really confusing, and you needed to win those minutes, and you were basically punting them by putting Ty out there.
Yep, 100%. Now, ultimately, even if – I don't want to go too far on this, and I don't want to belabor a point. Like, the game's over. UConn cut down the nets. They're the champions. Illinois lost in the Elite Eight. But we do. When we do this, we have hindsight and, of course, have continually talked about the Loyola game and whatnot. But UConn was the better team. UConn should have gone to the Final Four, should have won the title. There's a reason that nobody played them within 10 points. I think it's fair to say that if Illinois played a better game, they could have put a real scare in that UConn team. Could have been the team that played within single digits. Could have maybe – could they in a world if they play them even as tight as they did in the first half, let's say UConn's still winning at halftime, if Terrence comes out and plays like Terrence, who was against Iowa State or especially at the end or against some of these other teams during this run, Terrence Shannon at the Big Ten tournament, Illinois could have won that game because more effective offense leads to better defense, where UConn's not running a fast break line like they're doing 5-on-0 in practice. Like, that's what it was. So anyways, though, that game's over. Illinois went to the Elite Eight, and frustrating for sure. But I do still hold that – as time goes on, we'll remember more just Elite Eight ran into a one of the best teams in the last 20 years than how they lost.
Yeah, totally agree. And we saw how dominant UConn has been and was. They beat probably the second best team in the country by 14. Was that what it was?
Yep. So 309. Kyle's running Ty out.
No, I'm not trying to, but I do just think he's a limited player. That's why we just mentioned it. I would hope that Illinois' roster next year is built so you don't have to rely on him to start because he's limited. He can be a useful player, but if he can't play in an Elite Eight game against the number one team in the country, he can't be one of your trusted starters, in my opinion, unless, like you said, he truly does develop some type of perimeter game.
He's got to have some kind of ability to make someone think about guarding him outside of the paint. And it may not kill you because, like, it didn't kill you against Michigan State. It didn't kill you against 85 to 90% of the teams that you played.
It's the elite centers that you can do that with.
It's the elite centers, and it's just the best teams out there.
Yeah,
playing the top competition –